in association with iFanboy. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, 12 guests. That's right, 12 guests as we begin our floor coverage of C2E2. The Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo happened 2 weekends ago in Chicago. We had tons of interviews. We, of course, had to start things off with some of the big exclusive announcements that were coming out of C2E2. But we continue our talk with guys that have books that just came out in the last 2 weeks and more books coming in the weeks ahead. Also taking a look at some free Comic Book Day books that I am really excited about and was very happy to talk with people like James Robinson, who discusses the wrap-up of his Superman work, the Justice League Justice Society crossover, and more. Andy Parks talks about his Kato miniseries from Dynamite. Bob Layton talks about the science of Iron Man and shares some memories of his friend, the late Dick Giordano. Steve Christie of Arkea discusses their free comic book day plans, acquiring 3 fan-favorite Jim Henson properties, the book Tumor from Joshua Hale-Fiakoff and Noel Tuzon, and Mouse Guard. Peter David and Val DeLandro talk about their work on X-Force. Jimmy Palmiotti discusses the wrap-up of Power Girl and what's happening with Jonah Hex, both on screen and in the comics. Alex Albin on Thor and the Warriors 4 from Marvel. J.T. Krull discusses the fall of Green Arrow, the rise of Arsenal, and his new Aspen espionage series, Mindfield. Tom Zoller talks about his free comic book day issue of the superhero sitcom Love and Capes. Gary Gianni, Chicago's very own, discusses his work on the Prince Valiant comic strip. And another Chicagoan, Bill Reinhold, has another free comic book day coming out, written by Jim Shooter. It's the new Magnus Robot Hunter. All coming up on this edition of Word Balloon. Today we're sponsored by the Summit City Comic-Con, coming to Fort Wayne, Indiana, May 22nd. It's being put on by our friends at Discount Comic Book Service and InStockTrades.com. Included on the guest list, Andy Jewett, Art Balthazar, Chris Burnham, Dave Wachter, Gary Friedrich, Hillary Barta, Jeffrey Brown, Jim Heffron, Jim Nelson, Jim Rugg, a lot of Jims, Katie Cook, Matt Kent, Mike Norton, Robert Atkins, Tom Kelly, Terry Huddleston, Tim Seeley, Tom Scioli, and more. Coming to the Summit City Comic Con. Over 70 creators are going to be there. It's going to be a hell of a day. That's May 22nd at the Grand Wayne Center in downtown Fort Wayne. The show is only $10, and it is an artist show. There's going to be an incredible amount of talent there. Bring your sketchbook. You're not going to want to miss the Summit City Comic Con, May 22nd at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. If you want more information, check out their website, summitcitycomiccon.com.
Glad to be here at C2E2 in Chicago, and very pleased to spend a moment with James Robinson, the fine writer of Starman, wrapping up his run on Superman, tackling the Justice League and so much more. But let's get right into it. First, I want to mention Blackest Night.
Yes.
Starman. What a wonderful chapter of the Shade. Wonderful to see the O'Dare girl as well and where their lives are. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was they asked me would I do a Starman 81, and I didn't want to do anything with Jack Knight. If I ever did that, it needed to be more than just a single issue. So the idea of the Shade, who I've always had this affinity for, I sort of developed the character that we know as the Shade now. He was very different before I put him in Starman. So that was the plan. And since then, I have the response to that issue was so overwhelming that I'm developing now a 12-issue maxi series with the Shade that will have a lot of artists doing arcs, and I think will be a real a fun book that everyone will enjoy.
And you started to plant the seeds of where the Shade is in Justice League, correct?
To a degree. I mean, you'll see the Shade has a very small appearance in the Justice League Justice Society arc that I'm currently working on with Mark Bagley, and then that in turn, seeds of that will affect things about a year later, and the Shade will definitely play a part of that. So the Shade will be in my part of the DC Universe all over the place, and you'll see a lot more of him.
Interesting lineup at the Justice League. You know, the big announcement came, and we saw the core of Mon-El,
yes.
Dick Grayson and Donna Troy,
yes.
and a few others, and it seems a few have fallen to the side as far as the lineup, as far as where the current issues currently are now.
Well, when I put that team together, I was trying to draw from the classic characters in the Justice League, my Cry for Justice characters, and also some new characters. So the team sort of made sense at the time, but since then, me leaving Superman means that losing the Guardian didn't feel right. Mon-El's going back to the 30th century or back to the Phantom Zone. They needed Starfire in Rebels. Who else was there? But basically, I lost the team. You know, there's so much going on with Green Lantern, that, and then Green Arrow, of course, things are going on with him. So the idea of doing like my version of the Big Seven is what I ultimately decided to do, and that's the team you're seeing form now. In that, there's Donna Troy and Dick Grayson, Batman. And then there's also Conguerilla and Starman. Starman's sort of going to be my Martian Manhunter equivalent.
Okay.
Then with issue 44, Jade joins the team. She's the Blackest Night character that I'll be using. 44, 45 are a prequel to the Justice League, Justice League crossover that I just mentioned, which I'll be writing all of it, all five parts, three in Justice League and two of them in Justice Society. At the end of that, Jesse Quick will be coming over and joining the Justice League.
Wow.
And the S, the super character, will be the Supergirl.
Oh.
So you kind of have all of those characters represented in one form or another.
Fantastic. Really enjoyed your run on World of Krypton and Superman and Monel. Yeah, you've really fleshed the character out and revitalized him for this current DC age.
Thank you.
What stories will follow from the seeds that you planted in that?
With Monel, I mean, he's going back in the Phantom Zone, and I'm gesturing because Paul Levitz is the other side of this Superman banner. And Paul obviously will be using Monel in the Legion. However, in issue Adventure Comics 11, which is my final Mon-El story, you'll see that seeds of what happens there become a huge plot point that will be a big arc in the Justice League in the future. So I'm trying to sort of constantly build stuff now. As opposed, one of the problems I found, not problems, but one of the things that I noticed in the Justice League is they were almost always mini. It felt like miniseries in that each like four or five issues, it was a beginning and an end. And that whole aspect of like the B plot fueling the next A plot kind of fall by the wayside. I'm going to bring that back so that, as you see, you know, over the next, I have about three or 4 years worth of Justice League ideas. You'll see things unfolding and building and building and building. So I've already put some of that in motion, and you'll see that start to play out in the stories that will come in the future.
We should point out that in the Denny O'Neill How to Write for the DC Universe book, you've just described the Paul Levitz writing method of having those B and C plots kind of feeding during the A plot, and then they come to the surface when necessary. I think that's kind of neat.
Yes, well, I'm glad that I'm following on the tradition of Paul and Denny. That's wonderful.
Fantastic. And what else am I missing?
For the moment, that's it. I just want to concentrate on Justice League. Mark Bagley is incredibly prolific. And I've never had... I mean, the one thing that I don't think people realize is... Because we never really made a point of it, but with the 30-page books and with the price hike and the backups, the Justice League is the only DC book that is 30 pages of story every month. And that's because Mark Bagley can do it. For three issues, 46, 47, and 48... We're going to 22 pages of Justice League adventure because Mark is doing the Justice Society. He's actually doing 44 pages a month for 2 months.
Wow.
So that he can do those two issues of the Justice Society as well. But even then, there'll be a Cyborg backup for three issues that will, apart from being an adventure, will seed another arc of the Justice League in the future.
Who is your? Do you have a co-writer for the Justice Society parts,
no,
or you're writing it all thing?
Yes.
Very cool.
So, which it just worked out. It'll help Bill and Matt Sturgis to get ahead on the books, and you know it helps them that way. And it just felt right that there's more of an organic flow to a story when one writer does it, as opposed to when two writers, you know, mix it up. It always feels a little bit choppy to me, I think. So it was for the best, I think.
It was a pleasure reading your text pieces that were part of Cry for Justice,
yes,
as well as the story itself. And I hope we see more of that, because I really do enjoy seeing your point of view of the DC Universe.
I'd love to do more of that stuff. I actually would like to... I'm thinking more and more about trying to do some text stuff on comic books, like Steranko did with those History of Comics, you know? But maybe in the future you might see me do something like that.
Excellent. And also the seeds that you've planted for Green Arrow, I know you're part of the writing team along with J.T. Krull in terms of the path that Green Arrow is currently on.
I'll be honest with you, I did come up with some of the bits and pieces when we did a summit, but all of that, you know, being pilloried by the, you know, the internet and by the what are they, message boards for destroying Star City and everything else, maiming Arsenal, maiming Red Arrow. It was all for J.T. Krull. I had no benefit for any of that, but I'm glad that as people now have seen the destruction of Star City, it was always planned. If you notice, the rubble at the end of issue 7 is in a star shape. It was to accommodate what happened in Brightest Day Zero, which is now, as I kept saying at panels, has made Star City one of the most unique DC cities of all. So there you go.
Interesting. Well, we look forward to your crossover with the JSA, the Shade Mini, the Shade, I guess, Maxi series coming up.
Yes.
And more fun from James Robinson. Absolutely, my friend. Yes, thank you for the hump on the wrap-up, and it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Happy to be speaking with Bob Layton, who put such an imprint on Iron Man, your beautiful art, Dave Michelinie working together. Not only the stuff you guys did last year, finally finishing the Doom Iron Man Camelot story. Yes, indeed. But first, it's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you've been doing some great Iron Man work as well this year, promoting the movie.
I'm going to be doing quite a few things. In fact, I just finished an interview with Popular Science.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's like, to me, that was like a pinnacle of my career.
Absolutely.
I've been an avid reader, and they came to me and asked me to do an interview with them for the upcoming Iron Man film about the science of Iron Man. So that was a blast. But I'm going to be going to premiere and going to the Stan's celebration there in Las Vegas. And there's going to be a lot of stuff going on next few weeks.
Did you, when designing some of the newer suits and stuff, I mean, really, did you have science in mind or mechanics in mind?
I've always been a science buff. If you see my bag, when I fly, I read Popular Science on the way out to the airport, and I Scientific American on the way back.
Cool.
So I've always been, and I've always tried, I mean, even though we all know that, like, most of the comic book science is BS. I try to do as much real, believable technology, language, and whatever as possible. And, Dave Michelinie relies on me for that, because he knows that I'm an avid science buff. So, it's always, so they figured, because when I first took over the thing, we started using terms and technology that hadn't been applied to the character before.
Excellent. I certainly remember the classic days of Demon with a Bottle am I saying it right? Demon with a Bottle?
Demon in a Bottle.
Can you tell some of the newer stuff that's coming out? What can you tease this year?
Only that Dave and I have put in we have a couple of projects waiting for approval. One of them has just been approved, which is Iron Man Doctor Doom What If.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's going to be just a one-shot issue.
Cool.
I'm hoping I'll have time. I mean, I got a lot of stuff going on in Hollywood, too, but I'm hoping...
Great.
I'll have time to draw it myself if I can.
The stuff you were doing down in Florida with Future Comics and stuff, is there anything, you've got that stuff online,
yeah.
And I wonder with, obviously the iPad and everything else, if you're going to put any of that...
I just made a deal this weekend to take it to iPad, so the entire library, and we're actually discussing creating new material for it as well. Right now we have a project in Hollywood with Death Mask.
Wonderful.
That's in the works.
Sure.
The Future Comics characters are alive and well. We'll be getting them out to a mass market with the iPad application, which I think is awesome, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, and as a science guy, exactly. That's got to be amazing to see art. And it's so great to see art that's untouched because, the printing process with paper, sometimes you lose the coloring or whatever.
That's absolutely true. So I think we finally have an electronic version that we can read on the toilet. And that's what's important. I always told people the pamphlet, the little 22-page pamphlet will never go away as long as people,
need something to read while they're busy.
While they're doing their business. And now science has found a way to allow you to defecate and read comics at the same time.
Just don't short circuit yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But the point of it is that's the application. That's the science we've been looking for. So now I think you're going to see a new age of electronic comics media.
And also I wanted to ask, because it happened last month, it's recent, and we're all still talking about it, and really sad that we lost Dick Giordano. I know how close you were with Dick, and I didn't realize, because I remember The Law, but do you go back to the Charlton Bullseye years? I mean, I knew you were a fan.
I go back, I met Dickie when I was 19 years old. He was a guest at my convention I threw in Indianapolis.
Outstanding.
That's how we met. And he kind of took me under his wing at that point. He had mentored me, and I never had a father, so he was really that father figure to me that I never had. And throughout our entire careers. I mean, you think about it. At one point, he was running DC Comics. I was running Valiant, which was the third biggest company. He and I controlled two-thirds of the comic book industry at one point. And what people didn't realize is we used to meet every month at a little cafe in New York just to compare notes.
Was that that Robin Hood-themed bar that was kind of notorious
No, we had our own little
That's cool. Yeah, I want to let you reveal your...
Well, nobody would find us, but we basically we didn't want to be accused of collusion or anything, but Zeta, it was kind of fun because we both realized he was so proud of me and what I had done.
That's awesome.
And so when he retired and moved to Florida, and he left DC for the first time in like 20 years, I mean, I begged him to finally work with me at Valiant, you know? And so he made a deal with me. He said, I'll work for you if you will bring my first royalty check to me in person. you bastard. You know, it's like as busy as I was, the day we got the royalty check, I got on a plane Friday. I flew all the way down to Palm Coast, where he lived in Florida, and I handed him his paycheck, had dinner with him, and got on the plane that night. So he was always doing stuff like that to me. He was a rascal. But once I relocated down to Florida, once I left Valiant, he and I had made arrangements to meet every first Wednesday of the month in Orlando. I lived on the West Coast. He lived on the East Coast.
Okay.
So we always made sure we had lunch. We just kept doing it. We had lunch once a month at this one little place in Orlando. And then, you know, like I said, that's where we started Future Comics. You know, it was like over one of those lunches.
That's outstanding. I know at DickToYourDonor.com you can see a lot of the work that you guys were doing online, that beautiful science fiction story that he was...
Yes. In fact,
I
just made a deal with Ape Entertainment. We're going to release the last work of Dick Giordano, because he had finished the last 50 pages before he passed away.
Okay.
So Ape is going to publish it as a graphic novel.
Wonderful.
So we just made arrangements with them yesterday, so it looks like that's in the can there. So I got to get back to work on it.
I understand.
And finish the thing up. But it was the last thing he did, and like I said, it's going to be we're going to do this book as a tribute to him.
That's wonderful, man. That's great to hear. Pleasure seeing you, and really, thanks for all the good work for all the years and stuff. I'm glad that we get to honor Dick Giordano with one final project. It's wonderful.
Like I said, I was there with him right up in this hospital room, right until, you know, till the end, and wow. He even faced that, like he was totally courageous and never complained. And it was like, he was a hell of a guy. You know, that's all I can say.
Well, you know, I was one of those readers, too, of both of your works. And he certainly was one of those guys. You could tell editorially how much he did from creating the Action Hero line at Charlton, his years at DC. Your guys worked together at Valiant and Future.
About the creator rights that he was in the forefront of.
I mean,
we all get paid much better thanks to Dick Giordano.
Absolutely.
We all get royalties now, you know, in some part, thanks to what Dickie's work and making sure that the creators got their fair share.
Absolutely, sir. And these are the kind of things, really, in a longer conversation I'd love to talk to you about. So again, yeah, hey, continued success, and we're looking forward to seeing Colony come out, and also the Marvel stuff as well. Everything that says Bob Layton, I think, is absolutely worth picking up. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, John.
I am thrilled to talk to Andy Parks, the writer. I mean, yeah, we talked to Andy Parks, the anchor, but as Word Balloon followers from the beginning know, because Andy was really one of the early Word Balloon guests, talking about Union Station, his wonderful book with, was it Barreto?
Eduardo Barreto.
The great Eduardo Barreto. And then, of course, we just talked to Chris Somney on camera a couple minutes ago, Capote in Kansas. And Andy is slowly, just each time, coming back with some more stuff, a little Daredevil here, a little Annual, some Top Cow work there. And now, at Dynamite, is handling the exploits of the sidekick to Kevin Smith's Green Hornet. It is a Kato miniseries.
Exactly.
Talk about Kato for me, my friend.
This is Kevin Smith's Kato, and I wish I'd known that when I pitched it originally, because I pitched a different guy altogether.
Golden Age Kato.
They straightened me out, though. So my series starts with Kato in his mid-50s or so, has a 20-year-old daughter, and something horrible happens to the family, and we get to see her kind of take the mantle from her dad and become a hero in her own right. So that's what our story's about.
Excellent. I know some people are like, hey, man, that's a lot of Green Hornet product, but it's like,
first of all, as a Green Hornet fan, you can never have enough.
Right.
And secondly, I do think it's interesting, these three separate tracks, that Matt Wagner, Brett Matthews, Phil, or I should say right now, Kevin.
Kevin with Phil.
Phil's doing the breakdowns. And also, now Jai is doing the Golden Age counterpart, Kato?
He is. He's writing...
Jai Nitz, for those of us who aren't following.
Matt Wagner's vision of Kato.
Yes.
Right. And I think it's cool. Continuity has a place, I think, in these big stories. So Nick wanted to tell all these different kinds of stories based on people's different takes about the Green Hornet mythos, and he said, well, let's have continuity, but let's have three different continuities. So each one of these universes will be consistent, but they're independent of each other, and we'll just look at these characters from different angles. I think that's kind of cool.
I agree, and I think, again, there are three distinct takes going on. Brett's hasn't come out yet, at least of this taping, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. But have you talked with Kevin about your miniseries in terms of what you're doing at all?
To be honest, I haven't. I know he's there if I need a bit of information.
Sure.
Phil talks to him quite a bit.
Phil was on Word Balloon and talking about the process and everything. Yeah, I was wondering if Kevin was in your circle in terms of doing that.
For two reasons, I haven't needed to bother him and I haven't wanted to bother him. And I have his template, and that's enough for me, and I want to kind of feel free to run with that. So, I he gave me enough information to get going. I don't need too much static after that starting point.
Now, we're taping this in April, and I'm assuming I'm going to try and release this in April, but if not, is the book coming out at the end of this month, or is it May? When do you start?
Nick just told me number one hits in mid-May.
Very cool. Okay, because, we saw the introduction of the character in issue two of Kevin and Phil's Green Hornet with Jonathan Lau. So, and who's your artist? Forgive me.
I don't know.
All right, then. That's fine. We will jump in.
Ale Garza draws the first issue, and then there's a new guy, and I got to admit.
Oh, okay. All right, so we'll look for Ale at least on the first issue. That's cool. No worries. But that's great, man. Six issue miniseries. What else is coming up for you, man?
I'm writing another Green Hornet thing, a prequel to Phil's book with Kevin, which deals with the mob wars right before all that series starts. So I get to write kind of a Sopranos intrigue kind of story.
Okay. So, because the first issue starts with essentially the end of their career. They are finally cleaning up the gangs. So I'm assuming your series then is leading up to that moment.
I get to deal with them winding down their mob wars, and then with some introducing those mob characters you meet in his first issue and dealing with how they get to that point where they're about to be hauled off by Green Hornet.
Excellent. Very cool. And when does that series start?
I don't know. We're just getting going. The artist is halfway through number one. I'm writing number two. I would imagine it's a couple months out.
And who's drawing this?
It's a guy. Ooh, he introduced him as Johnny D, and I got it. He's a David Finch protege.
Oh, very cool.
And he's been doing covers for Nick.
Outstanding.
Nick said, this is the first guy I ever met who wanted to go from covers to interiors.
That's cool.
Usually they want to go the other way.
Exactly. Very cool,
but
man.
He's looked like, early 20s kid, very enthusiastic. So, it should be good.
Well, Nick has a good eye for guys and everything and newcomers, and a lot of people are making their debuts in Dynamite books. But, Andy, I'm thrilled that the writing is going well. We love you and Phil doing inking, but I'm happy that both of you guys are finding good niches writing and stuff, and looking forward to more. So good luck with Kato, and looking forward to the next Green Hornet story. Thank you. Glad to be at the Arkea booth. Happy to be talking with Stephen Christie, editor-in-chief of Arkea, who I was at the Retailer Summit, and, I'm already a fan of The Killer. I've heard great things about Titanium Rain and finally got to open it up, and that's a beautiful book, and really look forward to pouring through that. But your litany of product that you even spelled out for the retailers, I was blown away. I'm glad you've got Mel over there now, Mel Kalo, who is a great public relations guy.
Yeah.
And you guys have been very kind, and we're very it was a pleasure meeting you. But really, it's a good opportunity for us to go through some of the great product that you guys are putting out. I'm glad to see that Arkea, after a realignment, is coming back strong with a lot of really good product.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was having a conversation with someone yesterday that basically we are just, I like to think of us as the comic company for people that don't read comics. And what I mean by that is people who might be a little bit burned out on superhero kinds of things, people who might read once in a while but aren't kind of the regular Wednesday kind of crowd. We're the comic book company for those people because we try to have a little bit of something for everyone. If you want, kind of high concept science fiction, there's Days Missing, which is our book that we did with Gene Roddenberry Productions, who created Star Trek.
Absolutely.
And that just came out, and that's been a huge hit for us. We've gotten a lot of positive response from that. If you love, all ages fantasy, there's obviously Mouse Guard, which is our flagship title and one of our best things. We just released here at the show a fantastic noir book called Tumor, which is written by Josh Fialkov, who did Elk's Run, and is a fantastic writer. And Tumor was actually a book we kind of broke new ground. We debuted that on the Amazon Kindle first.
I remember. Absolutely.
And we were very careful about putting the book out because we wanted to make sure that even though people were seeing it on the Kindle, we wanted them to buy the book itself. So the book is a $14.95, almost 250-page black and white hardcover, and I think it looks beautiful. I think it turned out really, really nicely. So I was very happy about that. And we have a whole new litany of new projects coming out this fall. We have Fraggle Rock, which is debuting in the Fraggle Rock Mouse Guard Free Comic Book Day issue. So that's free. The first day is free. and that's a series we're really excited about. Fraggle Rock is part of our larger partnership that we just entered into this year with the Jim Henson Company. We're doing Fraggle Rock, a three-issue miniseries, and then beyond that, later this fall, we're doing The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, which I'm incredibly excited about.
And I know retailers were really excited when you made that announcement, too. And it's so funny because you can obviously see the age demographic and how old we all were, I think, when those projects came out. And it was like, ooh, yay, you know. And that's great, and it's wonderful because certainly with the Marvel merger, I think everyone was under the assumption that a lot of this stuff would end up going to, you know, a Marvel thing. So it's great because I know, and I don't even know if those properties are separate from the Muppet deal with Disney or not. So, you know,
they're actually separate.
Oh, wonderful.
All Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, Fraggle Rock, all that is separate from when the Disney company bought out the Muppets. So that's just directly with the Jim Henson Company.
Wonderful.
And that's part of the Arkea Jim Henson Company partnership, which is awesome. And the coolest thing about Dark Crystal that I'm really, really excited about is that we have Brian Froud, who's the original concept designer, and just kind of really the heart, along with Jim Henson himself, of the original film. And he's along doing covers, concept designs, character sketches, and doing just the overall story.
This is like those wonderful concept designs for Star Wars, and that's great to see that now for Dark Crystal.
I tell people it's the closest thing that we could do to getting Jim Henson himself on the book.
Understood.
Brian Froud on the book, and he's just a spectacular artist, and for fans of the films, I tell people, we just got his like full outline a few weeks ago. It starts at the dawn of time, and it ends at the beginning of the first movie.
So it's a prequel.
It is a prequel, and we delve into the whole Dark Crystal universe. So between Fraggle Rock, which is out in May, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, we have a lot of cool Jim Henson stuff coming. And we have a huge, 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 huge Jim Henson project that I wish that we could talk about, that we can't talk about until Comic-Con. It's bigger than anything that we're doing right now with the Henson Company. It could be the biggest thing that we're going to do with the Henson Company for our whole time that we work together. But it's pretty amazing. It's incredible.
That's good. Well, that's an excuse to talk further, man. And that's good because, honestly, I do want you to come on in the future. David is going to come on later in the month to talk about Legends of the Guard.
Awesome.
in depth. We had a quick floor hit about that.
I can say about Legends because David won't say it because he's too modest. But since I work for the company and they pay my salary, I can say it. Legends is one of the best books that Arkea will ever publish. Not will ever. Arkea has ever published.
Very good.
I'll correct myself there. Always set the bar higher. Legends, you have guys like Gene Ha, you have guys like Guy Davis, Ted Nafa of Polly and the Pirates, and you have these incredibly... Jeremy Bastion,
absolutely.
First Pirate Girl. These incredible talents coming in and playing in David's world. And the first issue is out in May, and it's a beautiful looking first issue. Really, really beautiful, and I think that people are really going to be blown away by it. And I hope that there'll be a little taste of it in the Mouse Guard Fraggle Rock Free Comic Book Day flipbook, which I also hope people will pick up because it's free, first of all, so there's no reason not to. And it'll give you a really good introduction to both universes of Mouse Guard and Fraggle and Jim.
Exactly what I told David as well. You know, the Mouse Guard fans who maybe didn't grow up with Fraggle Rock will be able to sample that world, and certainly the Fraggle, exactly, and I think that's a wonderful introduction for both sets of fans. I noticed Jim McCann's new project, and I'm forgetting the artist who is here and is doing incredible work here at the convention, but please talk about that book.
The artist is Janet Lee. The book is Return of the Dapper Men. it is probably the best project that I've worked on in my career to date as an editor. I'm so proud to be involved in it. I'm so proud that it's at Archaea. It exemplifies what Archaea is all about. We try to do things at a quality level that no one else is doing them at, and we just try to provide the biggest bang for people's bucks because, you know, times are hard, and we know, you know, there's a recession on, and we want to make sure that when people are putting down their money for entertainment, that they're getting something really worthwhile out of it. So, Dapperman is a fairy tale. It's a modern-day fairy tale. The elevator pitch is Dark City for kids. It's basically in this world where called Anarev, where there is no time. Time has stood still. All the clocks are stopped at 3:14 in the afternoon, and there's no parents in this world. It's a world all children, just all children. And because there's no parents, because there's no time, these children have lived a life where they have no conception of time or what growing older means. Until one day when 314 dapper men, dapperly dressed gentlemen, come down from the skies and start the clocks on this world. And the clocks are at 3:14, and they say, all right, go about your business. Tonight, you guys need to go to bed. So it's essentially these children freaking out because they have no idea what going to bed means. It's a bedtime story. It's a bedtime story, and it's a whole fairy tale. And when you hear Jim McCann talk about it, and Jim, he's one of my favorite people in the industry. He also writes New Adventures of the Reunion and absolutely Hawkeye Mockingbird, and he has a Dazzler special coming out. So this couldn't be further from his Marvel work. But he's putting such heart into this book, and Janet's putting such heart into her artwork.
Her art is incredible, and that is what we can see on display here at C2E2. I think I'll have to take a couple pictures if you and really the woodblocks are
It's woodblocks. She does the art on woodblocks, and she pencils all the characters on the page and then cuts them out and pastes them onto the woodblocks and then paints over it. She's been doing live art here the whole time. She's going to be doing live art at San Diego Comic-Con.
Fantastic.
And I'm so excited for people to see this book. It's probably my favorite release that we have coming up for fall.
This is the kind of thing that people will see in bookstores and, yes, be very surprised to find, hey, look, it is comics. Because, and as you say, it's for comic people that or people that don't normally read comic books, but also the older generation who may still like superheroes but want to move on to other genres as well. And I think, as you say, it's nice to see that you're expanding the all-ages side with this and also doing Fraggle Rock, too, and Dark Crystal. And, you know, I mean, this is great. And there literally is tons of genres represented by Archaea, and everything is really packed in a very quality way, and at an affordable price too. So I think it's a win-win. I think it's great, man.
Thank you. And you know, the best part about C2E2 as a show, as a whole, is that we've had so many people coming up here that not just we're just not Archaea readers, but had never read comics before that are reading comics. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing, to introduce new people and new readers to the medium that we all love.
Is San Diego your next show? Or are we guys doing any shows but in between?
LA Book Fair.
Good. Great. Well, that's a perfect place for you guys, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And but San Diego is our next big show, and we're going to have some very cool announcements there, so I'm very excited about that.
Excellent. Well, I'm 50-50 for San Diego right now. Regardless, we will talk again over the summer. Absolutely, man. And really, a pleasure meeting you at the show, and you've been very kind. Thank you, man.
I'm a big fan of your guys' stuff. I mean, it's awesome. It's kind of an honor to be on this finally. So.
No, it's my pleasure, genuinely. We'll be talking more with Josh and David, and certainly Jim as well. And no, I think Archaea is going to be popping up a lot in the months ahead as Word Balloon continues. You can't ignore this kind of quality product from Archaea. Steve Christie, a big part of it. We appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, John.
Peter David's daughter is about to put her bunny ears on, so it must be time for business. Oh, she's doing it for the dog.
No, it's not bunny ears, it's wings.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. All right, see, you know your kid's toys. That's very good.
Well, it's pretty recent. She just bought it yesterday.
Ah, there you go.
Bought it with her money. Now, Caroline, aren't those the wings?
Yeah.
Well, why are you putting them on her head? Yeah, you're right. Now she's giving her bunny ears.
There you go. That looks great. See, there you go. We got a good idea.
Yeah, really.
Peter David, who is doing wonderful work for Marvel, as he always has, but he's jumped back and forth at stores. That's an excellent introduction. I appreciate it. That was very nice.
He is Peter David.
That's beautiful. But it's funny. I was telling you, we were at the Marvel booth on Friday, and I confessed, because Val was very kind to say he listens to my podcast, Word Balloon, and I said, you know, I feel bad because I think you both do wonderful work, but I'm not an X-Men fan, and you were like, well, you know, starting with 200, the book is going in a new direction.
Yeah, that the notion that X Factor is, to a certain degree, you know, a book that is for X-Men fans, naturally, because it does have, you know, our own little cast of mutants. But we also want to widen the scope and make it a book that would be of appeal to non-X-Men fans. I mean, the pattern that we're planning to use, the blueprint, as it were, is the notion of from the old days of Marvel, where whenever somebody would get into a cab, it was always Moon Knight driving the cab, you know, Mark Spector.
Absolutely.
Or Jake Lockley, whichever Lockley, name absolutely. Was the cab driver. Whenever anybody needed a lawyer, they always got Matt Murdock. It didn't matter if it was contract law, criminal defense, civil procedure, it didn't matter. You always got Matt Murdock. And we want X Factor to have that same ubiquitousness in terms of being the premier detective agency for the Marvel Universe. The guys that the superheroes go to when they need something handled that's, you know, something they'd rather keep on the low down, or it's kind of personal and they can't handle it for whatever reason, or somebody who is truly desperate who needs X Factor's help, which is why, and the nice thing about it is that work for heroes or villains alike. They're not going to break the law on behalf of the villain, but you know what? If the villain's wife is cheating on him, then they'll be perfectly happy to track down and see what's going on, particularly if he thinks, you know, the wife is cheating with another supervillain.
That'd be cool.
You know, things are just going to be a little bit out of the comfort zone of your standard issue detective agency, which is why beginning with issue 200, Valeria and Franklin Richards came and hired them because Mommy has, you know, the Invisible Woman has vanished, which was the name of that storyline. issues 204 to 206, Second Coming is pretty huge, so we're getting involved in that. But then with issue 207, we're going to have one of the major villainesses of the Marvel Universe hiring X-Factor for a search and recovery mission.
Fantastic.
You know, that's, I think really, with the exception of Brian Bendis's Jessica Jones character, I know other creators have, even just because I'm an old Silver Age fan too, and they're like, who do you think of as a detective in the Marvel Universe? And I'm like, Hannibal King, but then after that, and of course Dakota North,
right.
But then after that, it's like, I don't really know, and Jamie Madrox, and I know this is something you really have set up earlier on too, but I think it's a great idea, and it's a wonderful device, and why not Jamie Madrox? I think that's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we were going for.
That's excellent, man. And you know, I'm a huge fan of your Star Trek work. Of course, your run on the Hulk. Are you still doing IDW Angel stuff?
Yeah, Fallen Angel, yes, absolutely.
There you go. Excuse me, your Fallen Angel.
Yes.
And I was confusing that because you did an Illyria series as well, right?
Yeah, I did an Illyria one-shot.
Okay.
I did a Spike series, Spike versus Dracula.
Yes, indeed.
And also, I did a four-issue Fallen Angel series in which Illyria was a guest star.
Right.
First appearance of a Joss Whedon character outside of the Joss Whedon universe.
Sure. Well, you know, you always handle all licensed properties, and really DC and Marvel operates the same way. I've always loved that about your work. I think everything that you adapt went from other licensed properties, you're respective of continuity, you always find new stories that old-time fans will appreciate, and also you always seem to be able to put them on a bigger scope than maybe the television budget never had. I certainly know that about the Star Trek books that you've done in the years, and certainly Spike versus Dracula, we finally find out how he owes him 11 quid or whatever it was.
Yeah. Ponzi Bugger owes me 11 quid, for starters. I think it was 11, but yeah, that's actually the whole limited series is about that, where we learn how that came to be, and it starts all the way back toward the end of the 19th century, and then it ends all the way during the fifth season of Angel, in which he finally has the ultimate confrontation with Dracula to try and even the score.
That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned Fallen Angel, and I know it has moved from, was it Wildstorm that it was originally at before IDW?
No, it was a DC book.
Oh, it was a regular DC book. Okay. Yeah. Well, and where, you know, what's coming up with Fallen Angel?
We've been doing it as a series of limited series because it occurred to me that, you know, Mike Mignola isn't breaking his ass to have Hellboy come out every month for, you know, 12 months a year. So we're doing it on a more of a reduced schedule so that, number one, I can keep my sanity, and number two, the artist artist has more time to work on each issue.
Understood. Your lunch is here, so I'll wrap up. But
the next one's going to be another limited series called Return of the Sun.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. We look forward to that. And Peter, I will bother you online and ask you for a phone interview sometime because I'll certainly go over your litany of Star Trek novels that I've loved for decades as well. It's a pleasure seeing you, and thank you for talking.
Thank you.
A Moment in Artist Alley with Val DeLandro, who does excellent art for X Factor, working with Peter David for Marvel. And Val kindly embarrassed me in a good way when he told me he's like, he listens to Word Balloon, and I was stunned, and he's got beautiful art in the book. And as I told him and Peter, I suck because I'm not a huge X-Men fan, but I do love his art. Peter made an excellent pitch for me to read the book, and again, that and Val's art made me kind of want to change my mind. So, first of all, pleasure to meet you this weekend.
Great to meet you too, John. Great to meet you.
How long have you been with, and again, because I'm an ex-novice, so how long have you been working on the book with Peter?
Since issue 39, the big baby issue.
Yeah, there you go, the controversial baby.
Yes.
That had to have been a lot of fun to kind of watch everyone go crazy over that.
It was crazy, yeah. It was hard to go online and keep it under wraps. You know, you want to kind of spoil it because I'm a fan. I started out as a fan of X Factor long before I started working on it. So, yeah, it was a great, great issue to work on.
And that's like a kind of shocking X moment, I think, in the X-Men history now. Yes. So that's really cool that you get to draw that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, I knew there was going to have that sort of reaction. It was going to turn around and everybody was going to jump on board. So I'm glad it did yield the reaction that it did. It was
cool. Were you a longtime X-Men fan?
Yes. Val? Yes, absolutely.
Who are your guys that you enjoyed from an art standpoint?
Oh, boy. Pick anybody. I mean, I just did the Nation X X-Factor one-shot where X-Factor goes on to the Utopia Island that Cyclops has set up. So that was like me being a kid at the candy store. I got to draw a bunch of them that show up that are living on the island. So you get Cyclops, you get Wolverine, you get a little bit of Colossus action. It was a lot of fun.
What about artists that have worked on the book? I mean, have there been favorites of yours in, as a follower of the book?
Yeah, I mean, I've been following since the John Byrne days. Dave Cockrum, love his stuff.
The classics,
absolutely. I was on board with Jim and Mark Silvestri. I was there with Adam Kubert and everything. I mean, my collection is crazy. I mean, it's been a long time for an X-Men fan, yeah, for sure.
We're in the midst of Second Coming.
Yes.
And I don't want to spoil, but what can you tell us about what to expect in the months ahead?
Well, X-Factor, I mean, being the fact that they're trying to integrate more into the Marvel Universe, but at the same time, they are an investigation agency of mutants. So that doesn't get past Bastion and the rest of the MRD crew. I mean, they know that X-Factor's out there. They do target them and try and go up head-to-head with them, right? But X-Factor's a little more crafty than they thought, so they do take them for a little bit of a spin, and they butt heads. So it's not directly tied into what Cyclops and the rest of the gang is doing. I know Cable and Hope and all of them are back, and all of that's going down, but X-Factor has headaches of their own with Bastion, so they're dealing with it too.
Excellent. And I must say, I always enjoyed David Hein's books, like Mutant X and Utopia, truly. And hearing what Peter had to say and what you've had to say, that clearly X-Factor probably is a book I should start reading again, because it's just who they are in terms of being mutants. It's not necessarily what they do in the book, is how it's been conveyed to me.
Exactly. I mean, I think the mandate now is, don't think of them as a mutant investigation agency. They're an investigation agency staffed by mutants, right?
I understand.
They're dealing with, I mean, I got to draw Absorbing Man showing up at the investigation office trying to hire them. You know, the Fantastic Four showed up, like the kids, Valeria Richards and Franklin Richards showed up in issue 200 trying to gain their services, you know, and it's a lot of fun to be able to interact with the rest of the Marvel Universe that way. I mean, it's a whole new dimension with those characters, so it's a lot of fun.
All right, man. Well, slowly, I think this weekend I'm being convinced that I'm going to have to start picking up X Factor from Peter David and Valentine DeLandro. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and I hope to see you at some of the other cons, and you know, we'll do a full-blown word balloon down the line.
Sounds good, man.
So, pleasure meeting you, man. Thank you.
Happy to spend a moment with Jimmy Palmiotti, the fine writer, inker, editor, who does it all. And
pizzeria. I work at a pizzeria sometimes.
Absolutely. Very cool. Wow. And we got
Mothra. That's a giant moth from Japan. It's coming. And there he goes again.
Damn you, Marvel. Anyway, clearly it's Marvel.
It is Marvel Comics.
I wanted to congratulate you guys on the run on Power Girl. I'm sorry that it's ending, but... Yeah. I can appreciate the circumstances, and you can tell people that haven't heard.
Well, Amanda's exhausted. She's never worked on a monthly book before, and this is 12 in a row, which is her record. But she hasn't been sleeping much. Her back's been hurting her, and it's relentless. She's not a very fast artist, and so she's better suited for miniseries and stuff like that. That all said, though, we're glad we got the 12 out of her. You know,
man, it's a great 12, and I'm looking forward to 12 when it comes out. What can you tell us about this final episode coming?
12 has everybody that's been in the book in the whole series. It's in the last issue. The Vortox, the girls from outer space, everything in the kitchen sink is in this issue, and we knew it'd be our last issue, so we kind of wrote it and set it up for Judd, you know, so he can go for the next day, and it's a lot of fun. You know, people are upset that it's ending, but I say we have two more months of books, so why not? Have some fun.
Excellent. And, dude, Vartox, I got to tell you, as a guy's been reading Superman books since the early 70s, it was awesome seeing Vartox come back.
I'm trying to get a little Vartox going in my my band, but too much white comes through. He's a lot more... too much hair. He's too virile. He's too, like... but, yeah, I love that character, and that was Dan DiDio's suggestion to use him. Yeah, Dan's the man. We love him for it. And Amanda made him funny and charming and crazy at the same time. I mean, we tried to keep him true to the character. At the same time, there's a very charming quality to him. And even though when he's harassing Power Girl, you kind of understand he really does mean well. He just says all the wrong things, like we all do, you know.
He's the Zap Brannigan of the DC Universe, you know.
Exactly, and he's awesome. And he's in the last issue as well, so that's kind of fun. He stops in to say hi, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but it's kind of funny. And we're just, again, you know, these are like 12 fun comics. You know, we tried to do something a little lighter than maybe what was going on at DCU. It wasn't that we were reacting to it, it's just that we felt with Amanda Connor, we have the chance to kind of do something different, so we did.
Well, and it stayed in the tone that you guys did in that the JSA Classifieds as well, everyone loved.
We followed Jeff, which is not easy to do, because we did it on Hawkman, and Jeff set the tone, we ran with it. You know, if it wasn't for his stuff, I don't know how I would approach the character, so Jeff really went out there and really made it easier for us.
And really, from a writing standpoint, you and Justin Gray, great versatility. You guys really can do comedy well. You do action well. We're going to talk about Jonah Hex in a second. I'm glad you brought up Hawkman, because that was a terrific run. And I really felt like, you know, that you guys were serving the character in a great way. And you know, had the essence of the character. What DC in general has been trying to do, get back to the essence of what makes these characters great. Right. Stripping away the bullshit and really concentrating on the good stuff.
Yeah, and I think with Dan, Jeff, and Jim there, it's going to be a whole new world for DC. I mean, I have a lot of faith in all three of them, obviously. Yeah. So I think he's got good times ahead. I think it's going to be a great year coming up.
And Jonah Hex, the movie is coming out in June.
Yeah.
The great thing is there's a bookshelf, literally, of Jonah Hex arcs now that are available. And thank you for bringing guys like Jordy Bernay to the American audience.
Not everybody knows who he is. You know, Jordy's a guy I grew up reading in Torpedo reprints. And I loved his art, and I never thought, you know, I'd be able to get him one day to work with him. And the funny thing is, before Jonah Hex, I used to commission him to do drawings for me, and it would cost a fortune, but I didn't care. And then when we did Hex, actually Mark Chiarello used him on a solo issue, and we were able to get him to do, now he does like four or five a year.
Fantastic.
And couldn't be happy. I mean, I love his stuff. I mean, he's brilliant.
Well, everybody that works on Jonah Hex, it really is this great artist book. David Michael Beck, Darwin Cook, all these wonderful, Luke Wilson. I mean, not Luke, excuse me, Luke Ross.
If you learn to draw Luke, you got a job. No, it's for us, it's since they've done in one stories, we can kind of try out a variety of people, and a lot of times this guy's coming to Justin and I and saying, I'd love to draw an issue, and we go, okay, you know, and such is the case with, like, currently, like Dick Giordano approached us, and, you know, we were like, really? You know, and we got him the issue within a week, and he went and did a most beautiful job. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be a swan song, but boy, what a beautiful book he did, so it's like stuff like that, you know, really, I mean, all of the books, but I mean, since 50, we hit a stride, I think. We have a variety of people, and it's just been great. I hope the movie does well so we can continue with the book, you know. But I think in the end, I think it depends on the comic fans, so the ones that support us. Anyway, movies come and go.
I understand.
You know. But the book itself, we're hoping that it'll be around for another 50 issues, you know.
Absolutely, man. And really, it's great to see DC pick back the Westerns back up again.
Yeah.
And really, from day one, you guys captured that spirit of De Zuniga and Albino that they had back in the old days in the 70s.
We had no choice because they left such a heavy impression in with their work. And again, working on the hardcover with Tony... You know, obviously, that's like a gift for us. And Tony did a fantastic job. I mean, 128 pages.
When's that out?
I think it's like the second week in May. I'm not sure the date, but it's soon. Yeah. Before the movie, like a couple of weeks before. But Tony still got it. And like I said, we just felt really lucky to be associated with any of these guys. You know, I mean, just, again, I'm a fan before I am a writer, I think. That guy's making faces at me. Yeah, he just ran away.
All right, fair
there
enough.
Was a guy there making faces at me. Yeah.
Well, man, honestly, seriously, you're a great addition to the DC Universe. Ever since you came on, I think you've been telling some really great stories.
Thank you, dude. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. And truly, I'd love to have you on Word Balloon, and we'll do a longer interview on the phone.
Awesome.
And we'll bug Amanda, too, maybe, and have you both at the same time. So,
absolutely.
Thanks again, man. Pleasure seeing you.
All right, man.
It's Old Home Week here at C2E2, and no, I'm really happy to see one of my friends from Comic Book Club, formerly of The Stack, continues to do great video work for Newsarama. It's Alex Zalbin, who is now also Marvel writer. Alex Zalbin. It's good to see you, Alex.
It's good to see you, too, John.
And right now, working on a great all-ages project. It looks like a lot of fun. It is Thor and the Warriors 4, as opposed to the Warriors 3, and Alex is here to explain why.
Well, the Warriors 4 are actually Power Pack, and before you turn off your podcast, yeah, it's great. I love Power Pack. I was a huge fan of Louise Simonson's run on the title. I was a huge fan of Walt Simonson's run on Thor, and so when Marvel had the idea for Thor and Power Pack coming together, that's instantly where my mind went. Going back to them, mixing it with the all-ages stuff that Mark Sumerak and Fred Van Lente did such an amazing job on, and really trying to put it in and make it my own thing as well.
It's a great idea, too, putting Thor in that kind of environment, because I think in a lot of ways, like Superman, he has that kind of fatherly kind of, you know, image and demeanor, I think, that works well in that kind of setting, I would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think Guri here is on art, so it's a lot of fun. They're amazing. They're spectacular artists, and I honestly, when I heard they were going to be on the book, I ran around the room in a circle. I was so excited. They draw a spectacular Thor. They draw a spectacular different types of Thor. There's at least one type of Thor that you'll see in the series that is a total ripoff of Walt Simonson, and one of my favorite things from Walt Simonson's run. But it's really been a blast. It's been a blast to do.
And the Pet Adventures also involved in the story?
Yeah, the Pet Adventures show up in the first issue, and they may show up later on. Again, this is borrowing from somebody else, Chris Heliopoulos, who did a fantastic job on that series. And again, they were a blast to write. It's just been an incredible experience to be able to play with these toys and write these characters and bring them together in a series.
It's nice with these books and Superhero Squad as well that, you know, Marvel is finally kind of developing this kind of comparison to Johnny DC in terms of, you know, what they're trying to do now with, you know, younger books and stuff and bringing a younger audience to Marvel in an easier way.
Yeah, absolutely. And also what Paul Tobin is doing on, I guess it's called now, Superheroes and Spider-Man with the tiny little Marvel Adventures at the top. And the thing that I think is so great about those books, and I'm a huge fan of all of them, is they really are all ages. That people hear all ages and they think, ah, it's for kids. But it's not. It's really for absolutely anybody. And the stuff that Paul Tobin does in the books is good comics. You know, when comic readers, and I feel like you and I have actually even probably talked about this sometime before, when comic readers say, oh man, I hate how dark and grim and gritty comic books are with these gigantic crossovers that I have to buy tons and tons of issues. Why can't they be like they used to be? Oh, I don't want to pick up that Marvel Adventures stuff. you know, and that's where it is. That's where these, not that there's anything wrong with the huge crossovers and pushing things forward, but they're the really wonderful stories, and that's what I hopefully, I don't know, but I hopefully tried to do with the Thor and the Warriors 4 series is really make it an all-ages read. You know, I don't know if you know, the plot is, and this is going to make it sound really exciting and super cheery, but the plot is that Power Pack's grandmother is dying, and it's not of, like, super scroll illness or anything like that. She's dying. And so they deal with it the way kids would, except they're kids with superpowers. So they figure out, hey, we know Thor. Thor's an Avenger. He's a Norse god. The Norse gods eat these golden apples that keep them immortal. Why don't we try to find Thor? And so they go off on this epic journey over the course of four issues where they try to save the life of their grandmother, and also there are funny talking squirrels.
No, that's cool. Do you have kids?
I do, actually. Yeah, I have a new kid.
I was going to say, I thought so, exactly. So, yeah, this is, you know, I mean, is that with, are you writing with that in mind, that you've got a, you know, a newborn and everything? And
when I was writing this, I don't know that I was thinking about it. That's an interesting question. Penny, my daughter, is 3.5. Actually, she's going to be 4 months old.
Nice.
I'm sadly missing her four-month birthday for this con. Right. That's how much she means to me. Nothing at all. If anything, I was actually thinking more of my grandmother's while I was writing it.
Sure.
Because that's what it's about, and that's where the story came from. Both of my grandmothers are not doing that well right now. I'm really lucky to still have them at their age. They're very old. But I thought about, okay, they're not doing well. How do I feel about that? And then I split that into four parts.
Terrific.
And also, I want to emphasize funny talking squirrels.
Adam, very cool. Excellent. Well, funny something you know about it. Again, what I'm sorry, I'm blanking right now because I've watched your guys' videos online at YouTube and various places. But tell me the name of your comedy group that you're part of.
Oh, yeah. It's Elephant Larry. It's a sketch comedy group in New York. We've been together for, man, probably about 8 years at this point doing stuff. A lot of people have probably seen we did a video called Minesweeper the Movie. That was a big hit on the internet. And my face is the poster frame. We're on YouTube, which is very exciting for me, and that's pretty much it. That's I do Elephant Larry. I direct stuff. I do stuff for collegehumor.com often.
Oh, cool.
As well as other places. I also freelance write for a bunch of places, and it's just really nice to be able to bring my comic book love with Comic Book Club and everything, and also my comedy writing together and write a comic for Marvel, which is so cool.
I didn't know about the College Humor writing. What pieces do you write for them?
Minesweeper was for College Humor. Okay. A lot of the stuff that I do is for Elephant Larry, for College Humor, and my role in the group beyond acting, and we all collaboratively write together, is I end up as the director a lot of the time. So.
Okay. Very cool. And, definitely see Minesweeper. It's very funny. I've seen it. And also, what I always appreciate about all the different... And it's funny. We're talking right now at Podcast Alley, and behind us, the iFanboy guys are there, a couple down there, guys from Comic Geek Speak. And honestly, what I love about all the comic book podcasts, and I'm sure I've said this before when we've all talked with the other guys from Comic Book Club, is the different flavors of all of our shows. And I think that's really neat. And I think, you know, the stuff that you guys do, especially in the live setting of the New York show and everything, and the stage show is kind of interesting, and it has its own vibe, and it really has more of a live talk show kind of feel and stuff compared to my one-on-one kind of conversations on the phone. And, I really appreciate that, and I really think it's, you know, if you haven't listened to some of these other shows, you really don't know what you're missing. And everyone kind of brings their own flavor and their own take on when they talk to characters or even amongst themselves, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great community. A lot of people, especially I would say, with those jerks and I, Fanboy. Well, they're great. That's the thing, is because they're a three-man podcast, and we're a three-man podcast. People naturally think we fight, but I like what they do. I listen to their show all the time. I watch their videos and everything. And two of them actually went to college with Pete, who's in Comedy Cook Club. So we're friendly with each other, and the way I feel about it is the more good people that are talking about good comics, the better for everybody.
Absolutely, man. Well, give my best to the other guys as well. And people, check out Thor and the Warriors 4. It just started last week. It's coming out from Marvel. It's a great all-ages story from Alex Zalbin, and it's very good to see you, my man. And I will see you in a few months in New York, obviously, as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a pleasure talking to you, John. Thanks so much.
You just saw the image of Minefield. I get to talk now with the writer. It's J.T. Krull, who does an excellent job for Aspen and DC. It's a pleasure to see you, my man.
Hi, good to see you, man.
And let's talk about Minefield. We talked a little bit about it in our recorded conversation on the phone, but now I've had a chance to see the Zero issue and get a taste of what's going on. CIA, War on Terror, you take it from there.
Absolutely. It kind of all spills out from this notion of if the CIA was really, you know, if they delved into everything they did in the past to try to find every tool they could to fight domestic terrorism, which is in the War on Terror, It's just a matter of, you know, them pulling out this MK Ultra program, which existed in the 50s and 60s, and trying to take it to the next level and kind of develop in the ultimate form of wiretapping to kind of police the country, if you will. So it's a little Bourne Identity meets like Minority Report. So, you know, so it's got a lot of textures to it as far as what we're trying to do. And if you saw in the Zero issue, trying to really convey the telepathy in a very visual, dynamic fashion. And every issue, we're going to kind of do it in a little bit of a different way and kind of really make that kind of a calling card, if you will, for the series and how we approach different things, and really let Alex Conant, who's the artist, kind of stretch his muscles on from different styles and from different types of tones and vibes of what we're doing. So, yeah.
This is a different kind of vibe for Aspen in terms of a book, it seems, and I like it. I mean, I I'm a sucker for espionage, so I'm already there once I heard about that, so that's really neat. But yeah, I mean, you know, everyone was cool and was excited about the idea.
Yeah, it was great. You know, the funny thing is, with Aspen, what we're really trying to do is we're really trying to kind of, you know, Fathom and Soulfire are definitely like the flagships of the company that Mike started, and we definitely want to keep those going on and keep his vision going. But, you know, in this day and age, we also know we need to kind of put new ideas out there, and we're really trying to kind of show that, you know, we do other things. I mean, with Frank and Vince starting Delic is a very different type of property from Fathom and Soulfire. And then in Mindfield, definitely, I think, you know, I agree. I think it's probably the most different from an Aspen project that we've done in the past. And that was by design that we did that. I mean, I knew I wanted to do it with them because they're great guys and they've done a ton for me, and I would not be anywhere if it wasn't for Frank and Mike taking a chance on me, you know, way back when we started working together. And in keeping with that, kind of trying to hit a different vibe, having Phil Noto do the covers, he does a great work, but also very stylized, very different than what kind of the stuff we've kind of done. But you know, we're kind of trying to mix it a little bit and kind of do different things. So I think it really helps the book kind of stand out.
That's cool. And Phil is a great, I think, cover artist to kind of invite people in too, and really plays, I think he his style, it's always nice to have superhero books, but I think it really does fit that kind of paperback, pulpy action adventure kind of style. So I think that's great too.
Yeah, he does great work. I've known Phil for years, and we've talked for a long time about doing stuff. And when I was putting the idea together, I knew that I really wanted to have him on the book. I totally agree. I think I like the superhero stuff he does, but the thing he really brings to it is that kind of that design element to it. And the cover for number one, it's this great image, and it's kind of like Connor straight on, but he's got like a pill kind of over him, and it's just, you know, it's just stunning stuff, and it really kind of pops. So it's kind of vintage, almost like a little 50s, 60s kind of retro look.
Yes, absolutely.
But with such colors and vibrancy, like there's a modern flair to it. So it's got that old classic feel, but it's also fresh and bold.
Let's switch gears and talk about Green Arrow, because, well, first of all, I should say, Mindfield, the Zero issue is here at the con, begins in June?
Yeah, the Zero issue came out this week in stores. We have the Zero issue at the con here, and then the first issue comes out in the middle of June, I think the 16th.
Excellent. And it's a 6-issue miniseries, bi-monthly? Or monthly?
No, monthly.
It is monthly. Excellent. Fantastic. So we'll look forward to that. Now we'll switch to Green Arrow. And you just wrapped up the fall of Green Arrow, which will now follow up in the new series, a new number one starting in June.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about the wrap-up, though. I mean, a big move, Prometheus. Green Arrow kills Prometheus. And at this point, I think we can spoil what happens in the fall of Green Arrow, the huge court trial, and the culmination of which, Green Arrow banned from Star City.
Mm-hmm.
And now is, I'm assuming, going to be a globe-trotting kind of rogue. That, at least that's my assumption. You can tell me.
Actually, it's not really mostly globe-trotting. It's more just about establishing him as an outlaw in Star City. If people who haven't read Brightest Day Zero, if you read it.
I have.
Okay, so there's a spoiler in that, which at the end of Brightest Day Zero, a forest, a dead man goes to Star City, and where the devastated section of Star City, a forest grows up out of nowhere. And we're really, you know, that's going to be where he's going to, Star City's going to be Oliver's home, and that's where he's going to be.
Okay.
So it is going to be this notion of, we're not even, it's not even like we're veiling it. It's a total Robin Hood.
Absolutely.
That's who he is, and that's the vibe, that's the feel, that's the myth, if you will, of Oliver Queen. And so we're kind of making it front and center and being like, okay, this is what it is. So
fantastic. You know, and I, like a knucklehead, I didn't even put two and two together that this forest, because it's just this green giant panel in that issue, makes more sense. And of course, now he's the outlaw of Star City, as you say, and sure, and whatever that forest will be called now will be his hideout. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really helping, because the cool thing about Brightest Day is, I mean, having the relaunch for Green Arrow anyway, because we're kind of going in this new role of him as an outlaw, him more on his lone. I mean, the whole thing with the fall of Green Arrow was almost more about the fall of Oliver Queen than having him stripped away of everything that, you know, that all the people in his lives, and Dinah leaves him, and Roy's off, you know, dealing with what he's dealing with, and Connor's kind of like, whatever. whatever. You know, so it is more about just getting in. Just look, this is Oliver Queen. It's Green Arrow. That's his book. And I love those characters. I love the Arrow family. But we really thought it was important to really just kind of let him be the focus point of the book and let him shine, because he's one of the DC's icons. And to want to put him back on that same level is your Green Arrow, I mean, your Green Lantern or your Batman or your Superman, your Wonder Woman, and really just kind of let him shine. And and bringing the Brightest Day element into it, the forest, there's a very kind of mysterious element to it that we're going to be kind of playing out as the story progresses. And I think it's just really exciting. I'm very fortunate and excited to have it all be kind of part of that big DCU, you know, Brightest Day push right now.
In our initial talk about what you're doing with Green Arrow, you mentioned that you were kind of part of a brain trust of guys and mentioned James Robinson and stuff. I got to tell you, I spoke to James yesterday. He gave it up to you and said, no, you know, a lot of the big ideas, those are all JT's. And I agree with you. I think it's great to see Green Arrow back as the loner. I think he works best as the loner. And you're right. I think being the negative character that he is, in terms of what some of the other heroes are doing, he's always worked best as that central negative. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's not to say that he's you know, like never going to, you know, team up with anybody again.
Sure.
It's just a matter of, like, you know, who he is at his core. It's like he's alone. And,
yes.
And it's almost like how people are, you know, they're married to their careers and their family life suffers. Well, he's married to being Green Arrow, and that drive that compels him to do that, you know, it just keeps kind of pushing forward. And I have to say, James has been involved in all this stuff, and Jeff and everybody. I mean, there's so many people that are involved in what's going on, and James is very nice, but he was a big help in shepherding and kind of helping me along as we kind of spilled out a cry for justice in both the Arsenal series and the Green Arrow series. And having the support of guys like that, and Jeff Johns especially, and Eddie and Adam and the guys at DC, and I'm forgetting names that hopefully they won't say, why didn't you name me? But it's to be able to go there and meet with those guys and talk in a room and just talk story and have their input and collaboration and stuff, it's meant the world of difference, and it only makes all the stories that much better. So I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
And, you know, we mentioned now the rise of Arsenal. Right now, not so rising. Certainly at the end of issue one, I mean, we see him back in the crack den and everything, and revisiting old demons. It's inevitable, and obviously it has to be part of Roy's character. I mean, once an addict, I mean, that really does become part of you, and it's something you fight all the time. So that's going to be interesting to see how he comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is something that, like you said, I mean, once an addict, always an addict, and it's definitely something that you know, if he's lost everything, and so he would look for anything to dull the pain, to kind of take that away, and it's just one of the many things that, you know, that kind of haunt him. And what I really wanted to do with the story was really just let that sense of loss and mourning, like, be the driving force, and not just have it be a story where, you know, so often, you know, it's funny, and I've said this before, is, you know, in a lot of ways, Blackest Night was designed to make death matter again. And for me, Arsenal to me is to make loss and, you know, injury matter again. And it's not just a matter of my daughter died, but you know what? I got a new arm thanks to my buddy Vic Stone, and I'm just going to go and onward and upward.
Exactly.
You know? So, you know, I'm really trying to treat it just seriously and do justice for what's happened to him. And it's definitely a dark story, and I'm a father, and it's kind of really dark territory to cover and to mine. And when I write it, it's really, you know, you really kind of go to some dark places to do it. But to me, it's a rewarding story, and it's a story that I think is worth telling.
Excellent, man. Well, you know, they gave you two great characters to work with at DC. Continued work on Minefield and everything. We'll be watching that as well. But I'm really happy for you, man. I think this is going to be a big year for you, and I certainly will be following, and our Word Balloon listeners will as well. So keep it up, JT. It's
okay.
Great talking to you, and we'll, as the story progresses, we'll follow up and do a new Word Balloon, okay?
That'd be great. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, roaming the floors of C2E2, and I have an opportunity to talk to Love and Cape's creator, Tom Zoller. It's a pleasure to see you, Tom.
Always good to see you, John.
And happy to see that the happy couple is now past the marriage, and what we're seeing in issue 13 is the beautiful honeymoon, which is going to be featured for Free Comics Books Day.
Yes. It starts off with the end of the honeymoon. It starts their first year of being newlyweds. It will come out Free Comic Book Day, May 1st, and then there's a retail issue version that follows later, just in case you miss it.
And, you know, Tom, for the longest time, you had the web comic strip that collected a bunch of the stories. And obviously, that's the buzz right now with the iPad coming out and stuff. What are your digital plans for Love and Capes, if any, right now?
IDW takes the book and puts it on they've done it on the iPhone already. My understanding is it's on the iPad. The book's pretty easy to put up there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it getting as many places as I can.
Excellent. And how close are we to another collected edition of Love and Capes?
In fact, if you look at previews right now, IDW is soliciting the second trade, which will be out this summer, June or July, I can't remember which. It collects the second six, which includes the wedding issue. And then the plan is to do a third collection down the road.
Excellent. And, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously newlywed time is kind of the focus, as you say, of this new, this coming arc that starts with 13. What else can you tell us in terms of, not without spoiling, what to expect?
Well, there at the end of issue 12, there are two characters. There's a question of one character is going to get together with one of two other characters. So it's who does who choose. That's going to send the book off into different places. They're going to have to find an apartment. I'm giving Abby a lot of, because Mark's place is too small because everything's taken up with secret closets. And there's going to be a lot of trouble at the bookstore coming up. So
fantastic. That's great. Seriously, it's one of the it's one of the sweetest and funniest domestic comedies with superhero drop. What's the word I'm looking for?
Superhero sitcom.
All right, that works. I was thinking, you know, just yeah, I don't know. I don't even know the word I'm talking about. My head's mush right now, Tom. I won't deny it. But Love and Capes is a wonderful comic. If you guys remember on the old Word Balloon website, I had the strip running there because Tom made it available to a bunch of websites, and I certainly took advantage of it because it's very funny. The art is beautiful, and it's great. So really, look forward to, on Free Comic Book Day. Make sure your store carries it. And also, we'll look forward to the next trade coming out in June from IDW. That's wonderful, man. So keep
Excellent.
It up. Good seeing you, my man.
Nice seeing you, too. Thanks for coming.
Very excited to be talking to one of my favorite Chicago creators, Gary Gianni, who you might remember from the Dark Horse years working on books like The Shadow, but I am thrilled with what he's been doing lately. And unfortunately, it's not in a Chicago newspaper, but if you didn't know, Gary works on the Prince Valiant comic strip along with Mark Schultz, and Gary literally is the third creator to draw Prince Valiant. It went from the originator, Hal Foster, to John Cullen Murphy, and then to Gary. And Gary,
that's 70 years worth of artwork. So that's a long time for three guys to be working on it.
Now,
I'm getting tired, actually.
Now, your work
started. Can I lay down and do this interview?
Your work on the strip started in 2000, correct? Assisting
2001,
John?
2001, yes.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
And you assisted John, much as John assisted Hal.
Right, yeah. He thought I had sort of a traditional illustrative look that would work well for the Prince Valiant comic strip. And it just sort of blossomed from there. And after a time, you know, he was in his 80s by that time. And understandably, he'd been doing it a long time, and there were other things he wanted to do. So one day he called me up. He was ill at that time, and he said, you know, I have to give it up. Would you like to take it over? And that was a big decision, but I didn't take the legacy lightly, and it's worked out really well. I really enjoy doing it. It's not as large as it used to be in the old days.
Yes.
It was, newspapers were this big.
Absolutely.
And now it's, you know, somewhat smaller, but it's still a very viable, hopefully entertaining comic strip. That's not just a one gag a week panel, you know. So,
Gary, you've written a wonderful book about craft, and it's called The Prince Valiant Page. And I think it's so interesting to see your transition from your style to reach that, you know, because as we say, Hal Foster and John Murphy as well really established this standard of 70-plus years on the strip. And to you know, maintain the look, not to, you know, push people away.
Also,
yes, and it's so interesting to see the choices you make artistically, some of the changes that John asked for, and really the evolution of what becomes the finished product. I think it's amazing.
Well, I don't think you can keep doing something like this and continually copy other people.
Sure.
Or else it would get boring very fast. And it's evolved. It's not Hal Foster's Prince Valiant anymore, even though that's the title. But I just feel that in this day and age, especially with a new audience, certain sensibilities have to be somewhat updated. Hopefully we're not stepping on too many toes of the old readers. But I think for its very survival, it needs a certain amount of changes. And again, a lot of it has to do with the size being so small. We don't have the room for it anymore.
Sure.
I wonder if, you know, as I say, unfortunately, none of the Chicago papers, which is one of the biggest crimes, carries the strip. It's a great national strip, though, as well. And also, the comic strips made it to the digital era much faster than what we're seeing now with comic books, especially in the last year or two. Mm-hmm. What is the URL to get the strips like Prince Valiant and so many other great comic strips as well?
Well, you're putting me on the spot here. But it's if you go to King Features or even Prince Valiant.
Okay.
That would be a link for it.
And you can subscribe.
I think you'd probably kill me for not knowing the URL.
We'll dub it in. We'll dub it in later. Don't worry.
That's the marvel of the digital age.
But it's you can not only get the current strips, but you can also get the backlog as well.
You can archive this thing back a couple of years. Sure.
Fantastic. And there's also a great collection, too, that Flesk put out of Mark and Gary's run. Mark
Actually,
Schultz.
Actually, it was Andrews McMeel put out.
Ah, thank you.
Collection.
Okay.
Far from Camelot, it was called. And that was about the first 3 or 4 years of the strip. Well, we have another 3 or 4 years now, and you can look for that. Yeah,
excellent. Will there be a new collection coming soon?
I hope so. As a matter of fact, Dark Horse was talking about maybe putting that collection
Wonderful.
Out. So
that's great. And here on his table, you can see some of the other great stuff. I also recently purchased Gary's. I guess because I know you had done it before, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but you expanded it, correct?
Sure. This is an update of an older strip that I did, comic that I did, and now it's in color and hardcover and all those good bells and whistles.
But great. Also, the Major Thrills book was awesome, and I'm really glad I got that. It's a soft cover, but it really is a sketchbook, and as you can tell, a great Atomica cover that he did for our mutual friend Sal Abinanti.
That's right.
And wonderful stuff in there, and works in progress, like 20,000 Leagues, some other old bits here and there various things.
Well, I don't want to titillate the audience too much. Can I say that on the
Absolutely.
Air, titillate? I'm working on something right now, and I'm just scratching the surface. It's going to be a heavily illustrated book with about 100 illustrations, many of which are paintings, and that's about all I can tell you about it right now, because it's not really
ready for prime time yet.
Well, if you talk about this stuff too much, it just turns into, so when is it coming out?
I can appreciate that. Sure.
And I'm doing it on the side, so it...
Well, that was one of my questions, Gary, because obviously doing a strip like this has to be pretty time-consuming.
Yeah, it does, but I still have a couple of days in the week where I'm not committed to Val, and this is another project that I wanted to do. I'm almost treating it like a hobby at the moment.
Okay.
You know, like going down to the basement woodworking or something. You know? So it'll get done sooner or later, and I know that's not giving you much information, but it's... Keep stay tuned.
All right, we'll look to the skies, exactly. Yeah. Look to the stars for more updates. No, beautiful line work, man.
Thank you.
I'll wrap up with you now, but say as well, Gary's been doing great illustrations for Michael Chabon, some Robert Howard hardbacks, feature some great ilios from Gary as well.
The Robert E. Howard stuff. The book illustrations I did for these sort of books are special to my heart. I really enjoy doing these. And this next project is another illustrated book along these lines, but not Robert E. Howard.
Okay.
So, that's about all I have to say for the moment, I guess.
Well, and I'll even
put... Before I go on.
Fair enough, but I'll even point to one of my favorite collections of Robert E. Howard, kind of off the beaten path, but his boxing stories. And the great thing about when you see Gary's show is if you bought one of these books, sometimes Gary will be nice enough to put a little sketch in, as he did for me when I bought the boxing collection of stories. So, beautiful pen work, beautiful line work. It's always great to see Gary Gianni, one of the fine illustrators in the comics community, and it's great that he's here in Chicago as well. So, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I promise we'll be doing a long one because I really do want to talk more about Prince Valiant and everything else that's going on. So.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Happy to be talking with Bo Reinhold, who you remember from wonderful work on The Punisher, all his first comic book work, but continues to work. He does wonderful work with Marvel, and happy that he is working with Dougie Brathwaite again.
No.
No? All right, well, first of all...
Are you talking about a Magnus Robot
Fighter? I am. Free comic book day at Magnus Robot Fighter. So please, tell me about the team.
Okay, Magnus Robot Fighter, I am drawing, penciling, and inking.
Outstanding. Yay!
Okay.
Yeah, Magnus wrote Fire. It was
fantastic.
It was announced this weekend at C2E2.
Okay.
And the first bit that's coming out is a 10-page story in Free Comic Book Day. It's sort of a flip book kind of thing. It's a Solar Man of Atom, drawn by Dennis Calero, and then my story of Magnus Robot Fighter, and they're both written by Jim Shooter.
Yes. Oh, Doug, Bill, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
This is awesome, man.
Yeah.
You know, I always bug you and say, because you do, Bill. You're an incredible inker, and also, as I always point out, that wonderful speed drawing thing. Your brushwork is amazing, and you do this incredible Batman. But it's so great to hear that you're penciling and inking yourself. That's fantastic,
yeah, thanks,
man.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be doing it. I mean, it's not that I didn't necessarily seek out penciling,
okay.
But I've just been pretty happy with a lot of the great inking jobs I've gotten.
Sure.
And I draw on my own here and there, do commissions.
Absolutely.
Or
I own a
pin-ups or whatever and things like that. And but it happened, just because I ran into Chris Warner last year in San Diego. And I guess he remembered me saying that I was open to do penciling again. We didn't talk about anything seriously at the time, but I guess he just kept it in mind when they were going to do these books, these Gold Key characters again.
Was Jim ever your editor at Marvel?
No, I came into Marvel really right after he left.
Okay.
Well, in a way he was. I did a short Moon Knight story in 83 that he had a hand in editing a little bit. He made some suggestions about the artwork at the time. And it was a story that was going to be in the back of Moon Knight when Bill Sienkiewicz was doing it. But they had canceled that book, so they ended up putting my book in Marvel Feature later.
Oh, okay.
But in a way he was, but not in any regular monthly book or anything.
What's the style of a writer-to-artist communication working with Jim now? Is it Marvel style, or is it,
no,
you know?
Jim works full script. I think he's always worked full script, as
okay.
far as I know. And it's pretty detailed about what he's looking for, and then we'll discuss it and talk about what's going to be done.
How is it working with Jim on this?
I like it.
Cool.
He has a real vision of what he wants to do. He's a very visual storyteller, so that's nice.
And, you know, were you, I'm guessing, because, you know, you love the classics as well, you got to be a Russ Manning fan, obviously.
I've appreciated Russ Manning's work. I'd seen it on Tarzan and some on Magnus Robot Fighter, but I never really looked at a lot of it. I mean, to tell you the truth, I really do appreciate his artwork. He's influenced by things like Alex Raymond and probably even Al Williamson, since they came up around the same time. And I mean, Al Williamson was doing Flash Gordon when he was doing Magnus Robot Fighter. I wouldn't say Russ is as good as those guys, but he comes from the same school, so I appreciate it for that reason. Actually, that he turned out a monthly book in what he did, I think, was pretty impressive.
And what I always loved about the Gold Key products, too, was those incredible painted covers. And I saw the Free Comic Book Day cover. Who's doing that for you guys?
I'm trying to remember his exact name now.
It looks like almost like an Ashley Wood kind of style.
It's really great stuff. I wish I could give you his name right now. I don't have the copy of the book in front of me right now. But excellent painter. There's two different painters doing the covers for Magnus, and another guy doing Solar.
Okay.
And people should look these guys up because they're great. Even though I can't remember their name right now.
No problem, man.
They're both the artist that's doing the Magnus covers. He came from outside of comic books.
Oh, cool.
I think gaming and some other things are he has, I think, a unique style for comic books. Yeah.
Well, this is cool. You know, they're turning off the lights, so I'm going to wrap this up. But I'm happy to be seeing these pages in front of me right now. And maybe I'll take a couple pictures if I can. Without spoiling any story, because they look great.
No,
and
it's okay.
All right, cool. And honestly, man, like you said, you weren't looking for the penciling job. I'm really glad that you're back doing full art, because all anyone has to do is pick up one of those Essential Punishers of your guys' run and see some of the incredible art you were doing when you were inking, but also penciling as well. I own an excellent Nick Fury sketch that you did for me years ago. It's still one of my absolute favorite pieces. So yay, Bill Reinhold back inking and penciling his stuff. Magnus Robot Fighter, you can find it from Dark Horse. Look for the Free Comic Book Day coming with Solar as well, Man of the Atom.
Dr. Solar or Solar Man of the Atom?
I think it's just called Solar Man of the Atom.
All right, fair enough. There you go. But you all know what we're talking about, so make sure you check that out on Free Comic Book Day. Thanks,
right.
man.
Yeah, thank you.
Bill Reinhold really was my last interview for the entire weekend, and as you can tell, I think my brain was really mushy at that point. Poor Tom Zoller, I think, got a quarter of my brain power when I was talking to him. But I hope you enjoyed those 12 conversations. More on the way, plenty more. In fact, look towards the end of the week, probably Friday, for a new word balloon as we continue our coverage on the floor of C2E2. This episode was brought to you by the Summit City Comic Con. It is happening May 22nd. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, at the Grand Wayne Center. It's on a Saturday. You'll definitely want to come out. Just $10. Over 70 creators are going to be there. The Midwest best artists and writers are going to be there. People like Tim Seeley, Mike Norton, Ryan Stegman, Gary Friedrich, the creator of Ghost Rider, the great Hilary Barta, Matt Kent, Jim Rugg of Aphrodisiac, so many other great creators. Like I said, over 70. Art Balthazar, Chris Burnham at the Summit City Comic Con 2010. It'll be at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, May 22nd. Check out all the details at SummitCityComicCon.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to my pals at iFanboy. Thank you to the new listeners. I know we've had a shot in the arm of some new people joining the show. Glad to have you here. More content coming, and make sure you get all of the Word Balloon content by subscribing to the Word Balloon feed. Get that through iTunes or at our website, wordballoon.com, and of course, even on the iFanboy page where Word Balloon is located, you can subscribe right there to the RSS feed. Lots of stuff is coming up. You know, we are days away from Word Balloon's 5th anniversary, and I'm so excited that to reach this landmark. I usually don't count the hundreds. I don't get into 50s and things like that. 5 years is a big deal. And a lot of the comic book podcasts started in that year of 2005. I know iFanboy is one of those as well. That'll just be happening in just a few days. And we'll be talking a little bit more about some interesting expansions in the Word Balloon universe. I hope you will be along for the ride and join in on every episode of Word Balloon you find. So again, make sure you go to the RSS feed and subscribe to it and be among the many, the Word Balloon generation. Any questions or comments about the show, feel free to email me, john@wordballoon.com. You can also post a thread at our message board at wordballoon.com, hosted by Jinx World. And also right there in the thread of wordballoon.com where you'll find this episode. Join the discussion. We're happy to continue the conversation with you at wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2010.